her life. The devils watched Peter, ready to attack on his signal. Every one of them prepared to throw their lives away, though not for the lady, Nick knew, but for Peter, for their feral Messiah himself. How many more, Peter? Nick wondered. How many more is she going to cost? Peter caught Nick staring at him and looked away.
We're gonna hit!
Dirk cried. Peter slid back next to Nick and gripped the rail.
Nick, he said, she is Avalon. Do you not understand? If we can save her, then maybe it wasn't all for nothing. Maybe there's still a chance to begin anew.
Nick could plainly see that any remorse, any guilt Peter might have felt for all the dead was gone, forgotten. It was about the lady, his precious lady. No cost is too high, is it, Peter? Too late, the ferry's big engines switched into reverse. Nick braced himself. The ferry managed to miss the pylons, the first few at least. There came a terrific jolt as the side of the ferry smashed against the remaining pylons, followed by a deep grinding and wrenching as the hull crashed into the dock. The ferry stopped with a final jolt, tossing most of the passengers to the deck. The passengers that could were up and climbing over the gate before the dock workers even began to tie the boat down, heedless of the young, the old, or injured. The ferry had two platforms to accommodate both decks of exiting passengers. Nick watched as passengers and crew exited from the upper decks, knocking and shoving each other in their panic. Meanwhile, the flesh eaters were leaving at a leisurely pace via the lower platform. All at once it dawned on Nick that he was back in civilization, that he was free at last. The nightmare, for him at least, was over. Oh my God, I'm here. I'm home.
Let's go, Peter called.
He slid down the foot rungs on the outside of the ferry and leaped onto the upper docking level. The devils and elves followed quickly behind. The witch and her brood scampered down to the platform, up the side of the building, and disappeared onto the roof. The troll began to ease his way down the rungs. Cricket started after Peter when Nick grabbed her.
Wait, he said.
What? No, we're going to lose them.
Exactly.
No, Nick. We have to save her.
Are you mad? Cricket, look, we're here. We're back. We don't have to play Peter's game anymore. It's over.
It's not over. Tagnost said that if we can save her, there's a chance she can rebuild Avalon. They plan to go into the wilderness and start over. All of us. You too, if you want.
Nick let out a mean laugh.
And after all their lies, you're going to believe that?
Cricket jerked her arm away.
Yes. What else do I have to believe in? Where else do I have to go? The devils are my family. Maybe one day you will learn what that means.
She spun away, slid down the railing to the platform, and pushed into the crowd.
Fine, Nick thought. Fine. Go get killed. See if I give a fuck.
He watched her rush into the crowd. She looked so small now, here, back among adults. The crush of people knocked her about as they jostled forward. Some businessman shoved her into the wall as he barreled past. Cricket stumbled but kept trying to press forward. Then a large red-faced woman crashed into her, knocking her to the walkway.
God damn it,
Nick said, and leaped down, rushing, shoving his way to her. He pushed a man aside, then grabbed Cricket by the arm, pulling her to her feet. She shook him off.
I don't need your help.
Like hell you don't.
Alarms were blaring everywhere. Nick searched for an exit, caught sight of Tagnost up ahead. The troll wasn't having any trouble getting through the crowd. People were literally falling over themselves to get out of his way. Nick spotted several people pushing out an emergency exit off to the left. He grabbed Cricket's hand and pulled her through the door, down a short set of metal stairs, and into a dark parking lot. People scurried about in every direction, but they saw no sign of the devils or the flesh eaters. They were deciding what to do next when several sharp reports came from somewhere back in the terminal. They sounded like gunshots. A garbled squawk blared through Officer Julio Sanchez's radio, followed by a snip of static. He hit the mic.
"Come again?"
The voice repeated the message.
"Copy. We'll look into it."
Julio spun to his partner, the bored-looking, paunchy officer leaning against the ferry turnstile.
"Mac, holy shit, dispatch just got a frantic call from the ferry pilot. Something about a gang of black men terrorizing the passengers. Station thinks the pilot might be drinking, though. He also said something about a large monster with horns."
Officer Mac suppressed a yawn.
"Relax, rookie. The guy's overreacting. Just some kid screwing around."
Julio narrowed his eyes. How long had he shared this beat with Mac? At least 3 years. It seemed the man could call him something besides rookie.
"When you've been at this job as long as I have, you've seen it all," Mac continued. "And believe me, I've seen it all. Just stay cool and everything will be peachy keen. Got me?"
A sudden jolt shook the terminal.
"Whoa, what was that?"
Julio said. They could hear feet drumming along on the upper level, accompanied by shouts and yelling. Then alarms began going off. 4 dockhands, a janitor, and some woman in a business suit came running down the corridor and leaped over the turnstile like they were in a steeplechase.
"I'm calling backup," Julio said.
Mac laughed.
"Backup? For what?"
His face went pale, and his eyes grew round. Right about then, Julio was ready to bet that Officer I've Seen It All Mac had never seen a horde of black-skinned demons wearing rags and armor and carrying swords and spears, dragging a naked woman and a chubby boy by a rope.
No,
he was willing to bet his left nut that even Officer Mac had never, ever seen such a thing. The monsters filed down the wide walkway and into the turnstile. To Julio's surprise, they lined up in a rather orderly fashion and pushed through one at a time. Each of them appeared pretty taken with the apparatus. His first thought was this was some sort of theater group, or maybe a bunch of hardcore Dungeons and Dragons players. He'd heard those gamers were into some pretty weird role-playing shit. He glanced again at the woman and the boy, saw the red welts on the woman's back, and ventured that this might be an S&M cult. But those weren't costumes. He could see their wiry muscles and veins working below their scaly skin, and on top of that, they smelled atrocious.
"These people," he thought, "whatever they are, they're real."
Julio finally found his voice.
"Hold up,"
he said as calmly as he could manage, wanting to keep things from getting out of hand.
"Stop right there!"
Officer Mac cried, his voice high and shrill. Julio realized with horror that Mac had his gun out and was pointing it at the monsters.
"Don't nobody fucking move!"
"Cool it, Mac," Julio whispered. "Would you please just cool it?"
A tall man in a black cape stepped forward.
"Who are you?" he asked, looking Julio up and down. "Are you the Lord's men?"
"Just a sec, buddy," Julio said. "I'll ask the questions."
Another monster stepped up.
"They're some sort of constables, perhaps guards."
"A constable?" the caped man asked. "Where is your lord? We need to see the king."
The rest of the monsters had filed through the turnstile and were quietly surrounding the 2 officers. Julio found himself backing up, trying to keep them in front of him. He set his hand on the butt of his revolver and clicked off the safety.
"That's far enough!"
Officer Mack squealed. The gun was trembling in his hand. Julio put in a quick call for backup and prayed Mack wouldn't do anything stupid in the meantime. Julio held up a hand diplomatically.
"If I can just get you to..."
Blam!
Officer Mack shot one of the monsters. The bullet punched a hole in the monster's stomach. It looked at the bullet hole and furrowed its brows, then stuck a finger in the wound and brought it back out, covered in black blood. Its eyes flared and it grabbed Mack by the wrist. The gun fired five more sharp reports. Some of the monsters stepped back, but the one that had hold of Mack, the one who now had six bullets in its gullet, groaned and fell over. In a blink, one of the monsters drew a short sword and shoved the blade to the hilt right in Officer Mack's eye. The blade punched out the back of Mack's head, sending his hat flying off his comb over. Julio made a play for his gun, managed to get it clear of his holster, but that was as far as he got. Hard hands seized him and he felt something long and cold sink into his stomach over and over until everything went black. The captain stood over the two dead men. Killing them hadn't been a very smart thing to do. Those men had been constables or guards, and he was sure that killing them wouldn't sit well with whatever powers lorded over this kingdom. The captain waited for the others to move on, then bent down and retrieved the weapon from the guard. It was obviously a pistol, but of a sort he'd never seen. So small, and with no powder or fuses. Such a weapon could come in handy. He stuck it in his belt and caught up with the men.
"What is this place?"
the captain wondered. He caught sight of two filthy men sleeping next to a rifled garbage can.
"Not heaven," he thought. "This is now, that's all. What the world has turned into while we were gone."
He studied the spiraling pillars of poured masonry, ran his hand along the gleaming metal and glass.
"And it is both ugly and beautiful."
The captain suspected there'd be more guards coming soon.
"Will they kill us?" he wondered. "Or worse, send us to their dungeons to rot? Have I merely traded one hellhole for another?"
Now was the time to free Daniel and get out of here. Escape these madmen before they got them both killed. The men had stopped, bunched up around the bottom of a long flight of silver stairs. The stairs led to the next level. The captain's eyes grew wide. The stairs were moving.
"Just jump on,"
Sid, the gangly midshipman, grumbled and gave Robertson a bump. Robertson shoved Sid backward and growled,
"You just jump on."
Ox pushed them both. The two men tumbled onto the escalator and were slowly drawn up the moving stairs, soliciting a cheer from the rest of the men, who then began to push and shove one another to be next. By the time the captain had gotten on, he saw that many of the men were actually riding back down on the other side, grinning like children as they gripped the black handrail. Halfway down, Sid turned around and tried to walk back up the moving stairs, only to bump into Robertson, causing both men to tumble down the steps and spill out onto the shiny floor.
"Enough!"
the Reverend cried. The men frowned, but they rushed back on, laughing like loons as they jostled to be the first to the top. They continued down a short corridor and found themselves in an immense chamber of glass and masonry. Light was everywhere. The very ceiling glowed. People in strange garments were rushing through the chamber from all directions, mostly pouring down from the upper levels, all intent on one thing: exiting the building. When the Reverend and his men moved into their midst, the people didn't know which way to go. and in the ensuing chaos, his men became separated into smaller and smaller groups. There were two sets of glass doors ahead, leading out onto different sides of the building. In the wave of confusion, about half of the men headed out what appeared to be the front of the structure, while the rest followed the Reverend out the side. The captain followed the Reverend, sticking as close to Danny as he could. They pushed through the great glass doors and came out into the night, lit with a million dazzling lights. Immense buildings of glass and steel towered above them, seeming to disappear into the very heavens. Several broad roads, not of stone but of some foreign dark masonry, lay before them. The captain stopped.
What manner of sorcery is this?
Dozens of yellow carriages with blinding lamps rolled by at incredible speeds, and there were no horses attached.
No, not sorcery. I know sorcery, he thought. This is something else. There's an explanation.
The lights, the noise, the smells, the strange people, their dress, their oddness, all threatened to overwhelm him. He found himself wanting to look everywhere at once and at the same time wishing to close his eyes and not open them again.
Hold steady, he commanded himself. Now is not the time to lose one's mind.
He locked eyes on the boy.
My duty is to the boy. All this other, the what's and how's, it can wait.
The captain heard a strange wailing noise, like hundreds of screaming demons, far away at first, but coming closer. The men looked dazed. Some stumbled forward in wonderment, while others were overwhelmed, choosing to keep their backs against the building, refusing to venture any farther.
There!
The Reverend yelled triumphantly.
God's house!
The captain followed the Reverend's gesture and was amazed to find that there, indeed, was God's house. A church with a towering white steeple sat just down the avenue. Atop the steeple, a gleaming cross was lit up by piercing beams of white light. The cross stood out against the looming towers like a divine beacon. Below the cross, a statue of some angelic saint looked down upon them with sad, forgiving eyes. Her arms were open, as though welcoming them home. The Reverend pointed at the lady and Danny.
Bring the demons, the Reverend cried. Time we finish God's work.
He raised his hands, clutching spastically at the sky as his eye flared with righteousness.
Lord, we come home to you.
Get down, Nick hissed. They're coming.
Nick and Cricket ducked behind a parked van and watched as a large group of flesh-eaters began filtering across the parking lot, staring about with their mouths agape. Nick heard sirens heading their way. He tried to guess what would happen when the police arrived, what they would do with the lady, Tagnost, Peter, the flesh-eaters, any of them.
This isn't going to end well for someone, Nick thought. Crap. And if they catch me?
He knew what that would mean. They'd take him home to his mother, deliver him right into the hands of Marco.
Wouldn't that just be some shit? After everything I've been through, I gotta get out of here.
There's the lady, Cricket said. Nick spied the Reverend, then the lady, as Ox marched her into the parking lot. She was still tied to Danny. Danny looked terrified, but the lady's face showed no emotion. She plodded along with her head down, looking so out of place, so fragile and vulnerable among the noise, glass, steel, and endless concrete.
We have to do something, Cricket said.
Do what, huh?
There's nothing the two of us can do. Look, now's our chance to get out of here before the police have this place surrounded.
Are you kidding? Are you really just gonna run away?
I'm not going to get killed for her. Not for that creature. Not for Peter. Not for any of them.
So you're just gonna abandon her? Just like that? Just like you did with your mother?
Don't give me any more of that crap, Nick snapped. She's not my mother. I don't owe her a thing.
But he knew that wasn't entirely true. He'd be dead right now if not for the lady. Dead or some sort of a half-mad demon, like one of those flesh-eaters. She'd saved him. She'd taken the darkness from him, regardless of how any of this came about. With what seemed like an effort, the lady lifted her head and Nick found her eyes directly on him. They were silver now, all their color drained. He sensed her deep within his core, believed he heard her speak his name, a sound as soft as an echo, as though they were still beneath the dark waters of her pond. For a moment, Nick could actually see the magical aura that surrounded her, the way it bled from her. Tiny sparkling tendrils that flowed and trailed about her, could see magic hiding here and there, peeping out from among the metal and concrete, the garbage and asphalt. The magic flourished as the lady passed, blooming like a garden after the first spring rain. He felt the magic within him, around him, felt it stronger than ever, understood that even here in the city, in the world of men, magic did exist, woven into the very fabric of the earth. That magic was a fragile and threatened element, and without shepherds like the lady, it would fade, and the earth would become a darker, colder place. Ox yanked the lady forward, knocking her to the sidewalk.
To your feet, demon!
Ox yelled, and kicked her, sending her sprawling across the concrete. Nick winced. Ox grabbed the lady by her hair, snatched her to her feet, and gave her a hard shove forward. Nick could see fresh blood streaming down both of her knees.
Okay, Nick said.
What?
Okay, we'll follow them.
Cricket nodded.
Just in case, though, Nick added. In case there's a chance. Something we can do. But you have to promise me you won't do anything stupid.
Cricket grinned.
Me? Never.
They were interrupted by a blaring car horn. The Reverend, followed by his flock, crossed an intersection and headed up the avenue. Nick looked ahead and saw the church, knew that was where they were taking the lady, had several guesses to why, and not one of them was good. Nick and Cricket sprinted across the lot, staying low behind the vehicles, trailing the flesh-eaters. Nick caught the flash of emergency vehicles coming from far down the street.
The lady's running out of time. Where's Peter? Where the hell did he go?
A heavily wooded park bordered the avenue. Nick and Cricket ducked into the trees. They crept along behind the bushes, keeping pace with the flesh-eaters. Nick had no idea what they were going to do, could do, but figured they'd stay close and wait for some chance, some opportunity. The flesh-eaters began to drift apart as they marched up the sidewalk. Many appeared distracted, more interested in this strange new place than the Reverend in his tirades. Nick and Cricket came upon a long rectangular pond with a small fountain in the center. There was good cover among the hedges on the far end of the pond, up near the street. They dropped down behind the hedge and pressed up as close to the road as they dared. The Reverend headed for the church steps, pushing right out into the street. Several men and Ox pulling Danny and the lady followed close behind. Car horns blared. There came the screech of tires as a taxi swerved, just missing the Reverend, spun sideways, and slammed into another taxi. The flesh-eaters were showered in glass and metal fragments. There came more squealing brakes and cars began backing up in both directions. Men got out of their vehicles, shouting and cursing. Horns began going off all up and down the avenue. The flesh-eaters stood staring bug-eyed at all the commotion. For the moment, the lady and Danny were completely unattended,
Now, thought Nick. We could grab her now. Just...
Then, an odd thing happened, making no sense to Nick. The captain moved up behind Ox and slid out the giant sword. Before Ox even knew his sword was gone, the captain brought the hilt down on his head, striking three solid blows. The giant dropped the rope and tumbled over. The captain pushed Danny and the lady back behind him toward the park, toward Nick and Cricket. The Reverend saw the captain, and his good eye filled with outrage.
Stop them! He called.
The flesh-eaters barely noticed, still entranced by the wreckage and mayhem.
Stop them! The Reverend screeched. Stop them! Stop them now!
This brought the flesh-eaters around. They locked steely eyes on the lady and the captain. Several pulled out their swords and moved to block the captain's escape. Horns went off all up and down the avenue, and sirens came from every direction.
Where is she?
The question repeated itself over and over in Peter's mind until he wanted to scream. For the 100th time, he scanned the clusters of gawking flesh-eaters wandering aimlessly up and down the sidewalk. But still, no sign of the lady. They'd caught sight of the flesh-eaters from inside the terminal and followed them out onto the street, keeping low and out of sight. But now Peter believed that the flesh-eaters had become separated beforehand, understood that the Reverend and the lady must have ended up with another group somewhere else, possibly on the other side of the terminal altogether. Peter, the elves, and the devils all ducked down as four patrolmen tromped past. When the police saw the flesh-eaters, they halted, radioing for backup. Peter could see a line of officers forming a perimeter farther down the street, and several more running up the sidewalk toward the terminal.
We're out of time,
Peter hissed between his teeth. They had to find the lady. Had to find her now. Peter signaled the devils and elves, and they slipped back up the street, back toward the terminal, heading for the parking lot on the far side.
Captain, you will bring me the demons at once,
the Reverend shouted in a voice that expected only obedience. He took a step toward the captain. The captain pointed his sword at the Reverend.
No, Your Grace, I will not.
The Reverend halted, his mouth tightening into a small, thin line. His good eye seethed.
Captain, you're not thinking clearly. Hand them over. That is a command.
The Reverend nodded to the men. They moved in, trying to circle them. The captain knew if he let that happen, they were done. Keeping his sword on guard, he backstepped, pressing Danny and the lady through the hedges and into the park. The hedges blocked the men, at least for the moment. Time to run, the captain thought, and it was then he realized his oversight. They couldn't run, not with Daniel tied to the lady. She could barely walk, much less outrun anyone. He needed to cut them apart, leave the lady, and then maybe they could escape. But the rope was as thick as his wrist, would take some effort to saw or hack through it. Yet if he dropped his guard even for a second, they'd have him. The Reverend, his face rigid, followed the captain into the park, flanked by several men.
I am God's right hand,
the Reverend called, his voice sounding strained.
It is unwise to challenge the Lord's will.
The captain laughed.
You're nothing more than a sadistic ass.
The Reverend let out a sound somewhere between a choke and a bark, the good side of his face twisted into a snarl. The men pushed through the hedges. The captain knew it was only a matter of moments before they attacked. More men were coming into the park. They drew their swords and filled in the ranks. The captain cut the air with his sword.
I can't take all of you, but I'll certainly gut the first man that comes near.
Who has come this far only to die now?
The men hesitated. None seemed in a big hurry to move, all only too aware of the captain's prowess with the blade. Ox came barreling forward, wiping the blood from his face. He caught sight of the captain and spat. He snatched a sword away from the nearest man and started forward. The Reverend put a hand in front of Ox. The giant halted.
"Captain," the Reverend said, "you've lost your way, that's all. Be sensible. Hand them over, and I shall forgive your indiscretion."
The captain bumped into Danny, and a quick glance around showed him they'd come to a long rectangular pond. His heart sank as he realized they were trapped. The Reverend saw it as well and grinned.
"Captain, I will not ask you again."
"It has all been for naught. We're going to die here, after all we've been through. This is so senseless."
The captain looked from man to man. His eyes appealed to them.
"Are you all blind? It's over. We're off the island. Look."
The captain pointed at a trash can spilling over with garbage.
"This is not heaven. God is not here. There is..."
"No!"
the Reverend shouted, his face a knot of rage.
"No, it is you that are blind."
His voice quivered as spit flew from his lips.
"We did not sit in purgatory for an eternity for nothing. Somewhere in this kingdom, God awaits us even now."
He pointed at Danny and the lady.
"These dark souls are our passage, proof of our unwavering faith and diligence. It is our duty to bring these demons before the Lord and then to claim our place by his side."
His voice cracked.
"I will take my place by the Lord's side."
His madness has him, the captain thought.
And sadly, he could see that same madness in the eyes of the men as they nodded along.
"God help us all," he said,
and with his free hand, drew the dead constable's gun from his belt and pointed it at the lead man. It took the men a moment to recognize the weapon, but when they did, they looked unsure. The captain aimed the revolver at the Reverend's face. The Reverend's good eye went wide. The captain took a lifetime's pleasure in the Reverend's look of utter outrage.
"You dare not!"
the Reverend shrieked.
"I am God's soldier! I march beside the Lord!"
"You march with the damned," the captain said, and squeezed the trigger four times.
There came four deafening reports. The first shot missed completely. The second punched a clean hole in the Reverend's cheek. The third took out his dead eye. The fourth hit above the brow, and the entire side of the Reverend's head exploded. The Reverend stood a second longer, his one good eye continuing to glare. Then he crumpled to the ground. The captain could see the backside of the Reverend's head was gone. There was a prolonged moment when they all just stared at the dead man's black brains.
Ulfgar heard the distant sirens and thought of demons, heard the lapping of waves beating against the hull, and finally dared raise his head.
He pushed his father's corpse aside and gazed upon the towers of lights.
"So many lights," he thought.
"What could it mean?"
The wind took the longboat, pushed it directly toward the rocky sea wall. Ulfgar stared into the hollows of his father's eyes.
"Enough," he whimpered. "Enough, I beg you. Leave me be. Enough, enough, enough."
Ulfgar seized the carcass by the neck, twisting the leathery flesh until the head tore loose from the shoulders. He lifted the head by its long braided beard and slammed it against the hull over and over, the sound like a war drum, grunting and spitting with the effort until he held nothing but a piece of shredded flesh.
There. Now what do you have to say? What?
He laughed, close to shrieking, and threw the rag of flesh into the waves.
And when I find your sister, I'll send her to you. Send them all to you. And when I find the child thief, him I will feed to Caliburn.
He patted the black sword. Ulfgar picked up the corpse and shoved it overboard, watched it drift slowly away into the darkness. The boat ran aground against a large piling of stones. Ulfgar heard commotion, loud popping sounds. Four of them. Shouting. Cries. He hefted Caliburn, crawled out of the boat, and climbed up the rocks. He found well-lit pathways of poured masonry, edged by trimmed hedges leading in all directions. He headed into the trees, toward the shouts, looking for her, for the runt. Any of them would do, for he planned to kill them all. Every one. Nick jumped at the sound of the gun, watched the Reverend topple. Both he and Cricket hunkered down, pressed themselves deeper into the wide hedge. They had the pond at their backs, and the captain stood just a few yards in front. Danny and the lady were now so close they could almost touch them. Flesh-eaters were everywhere, leaving them no place to run. Shit, how the fuck did this happen? The captain turned the revolver on the flesh-eaters. Not one of them moved.
Just let me and the boy pass. That's all I ask, the captain said calmly. You can have the woman.
No, Ox roared. We do not bargain with demons and murderers. God's justice will be done.
Some of the flesh-eaters looked as though they were waking up from a nightmare, like they'd had enough of the insanity and began to fall back. But most stayed. Nick could see that these believed. It burned in their eyes, the same fervent faces that had condemned him back at the fort. And here, in this world, their mania seemed stronger than ever.
The pond, Cricket whispered. Get the lady into the pond.
What? Nick said, then understood she meant for them to snatch the lady and flee across the pond.
No,
he hissed, grabbing her arm.
That won't work. We have to...
His mouth clamped shut. The flesh-eaters were pressing in. They'd be discovered any second now. Did he really want to die in this bush, like a quivering rabbit? They had to do something. Anything.
Fuck. Fuck,
he said, still trying to figure out how he'd gotten himself right smack in the middle of this nightmare.
Fuck,
he said again, gritted his teeth, and stood up. Just stood up like a jack-in-the-box, leaves and limbs fluttering off him, having no idea what he was going to do next. Cricket popped up next to him. The flesh-eaters halted. All eyes fell on them. Hard, murderous eyes, and Nick immediately regretted his rashness.
Ah, fuck.
The captain glanced over at them and blinked, cocked his head sideways as though trying to make sense of what he was seeing.
Demons!
Shouted one of the flesh-eaters, pointing at them with a wavering hand.
Demons!
Several of them echoed, glaring at them, their faces twisted with hatred and alarm, clearly vexed by how they could be here in this place. Nick felt his heart would explode, felt if he didn't act, and act swiftly, his legs would buckle beneath him. He yanked out his sword, bared his teeth.
This is our city! Demon City!
He screamed, and screamed it so loud and forceful that even he believed it.
We're everywhere! A million hungry demons, and we're going to eat your motherfucking souls!
That rattled them. Fear flashed across their faces as they jerked about nervously, searching the trees, the bushes, behind them, above them. Even Ox appeared spooked, his eyes flickering back and forth in their deep sockets.
Hurry,
Cricket said and dashed over to the lady. Nick jumped over, and together they hefted the lady to her feet. The lady looked at them with dazed, faraway eyes.
Come on, Danny, Cricket said harshly. Help us!
But Danny just stood there, seemed incapable of doing anything but staring on in wide-eyed terror. Nick gave the rope a hard yank, pulling Danny toward them.
Danny, move your ass!
This is her sorcery,
Ox said, then bellowed.
We must kill her! Kill her here and now! Kill her before she bewitches us all!
He raised his sword and charged the lady. The captain fired, managed to hit Ox twice before his revolver clicked on a spent round. The shots barely even slowed the giant. The captain made to intercept Ox when two men rushed him. The night erupted with the shouts of men and the clang of steel on steel. Cricket tugged both the lady and Danny toward the pond. The lady saw the water, and her eyes came alive. The three of them stumbled down the bank. Ox came for them, eyes blazing. He brought his sword about in a terrific arch, aimed at the lady's neck. There was no time for Nick to do anything but act. He lunged forward, swinging Maldurial upward with all he had. The blades clashed. The crushing jolt almost knocked Nick's sword from his hand, but he managed to smack the giant's blow aside. The blade missed its mark, slicing deep into the lady's collar instead. Ox roared, yanked his sword free, and turned on Nick. Nick had an instant to realize this hulking monster was about to kill him, an instant to scream to himself to run. But he didn't run. A snarl escaped his throat, and he attacked, striking for the giant's neck. Ox brought his sword to bear, and when he did, Nick fainted, sliding down low and fast, slicing the giant just beneath the kneecap. Ox let out a howl and swung for Nick's head. Nick ducked the blow and became aware that it didn't matter that this giant was massive and powerful, because he, Nick, was fast, impossibly fast, just like a certain golden-eyed boy he'd met in a park a lifetime ago. He hacked into the giant's ankle, relishing in the feeling of Maldurial biting deep into the man's tendons.
Down, you bastard!
Nick cried.
Go down!
Surprise and shock showed on the giant's face. He howled and collapsed to one knee. Cricket came at him from behind and thrust her sword into the back of his neck, her blade punching out the front of his throat. Ox's eyes went wide. He let out a loud gurgle and toppled over. Nick had seen far too many horror movies where tenacious monsters get up time after time to be satisfied with that. He let out a howl, a wild animal sound, and brought Maldurial down with all his weight behind it, chopping the giant's head from his shoulders. Nick looked for the lady, saw her clutching her collar. Blood poured through her fingers. She collapsed to her knees, then slid into the pond, pulling Danny in with her.
She's done, Nick thought. There's nothing more we can do for her. Time to get out of here.
A sharp cry, and another man fell before the captain. Four men lay moaning at his feet. The flesh eaters fell back. Nick hoped that was it, that they'd had enough, when a dozen more men came running up, climbing over the hedges, filling in the ranks. There were too many now, just too many. He considered making a mad dash into the pond to take his chances there, but there were flesh-eaters along both banks now, a few wading into the water, intent on seeing to it that the lady never came out. But they needn't bother. Nick saw her eyes roll up in her head, and she sank below the dark water, while Danny just stood there, knee-deep in the pond, staring numbly at her. "This is it," he thought. "I'm not going home. I'm not going anywhere." Nick ground his teeth together. Shit, this wasn't supposed to happen. So stupid. Why had I been so stupid?
"Shore up,"
the captain called to Nick and Cricket. Nick met the captain's eyes, saw the will and spirit of a man who intended to live. The captain grinned at them.
"I say if they want us, then we make them pay a heavy toll. What say you?"
Nick found the captain's spirit infectious. He nodded back and closed ranks with the man. The captain clutched Nick's shoulder, gave him a hearty shake.
"Good to have such a sure hand at my side."
Cricket followed suit, and the three of them stood back to back, swords out, daring the flesh-eaters to come within reach.
"Come!"
the captain yelled, and waved the flesh-eaters on.
"Who's next to die?"
The flesh-eaters pulled together and began to press in. Nick's pulse thundered in his ears. His breath came hard and fast.
"Steady," the captain said.
Nick clutched his sword in both hands, squeezing the hilt so hard his fingers hurt.
"Mom," he whispered. "I love you, Mom."
There came a bellow, followed by a loud snort like a bull's. Everyone stopped. There, behind the flesh-eaters, stood Tangnost, carrying a thick branch. Gone was any trace of the fretting old meddler. What stood before them was a ferocious wild beast. Tangnost peeled back his lips, exposing his tusks and giant canines. A long, deep growl rumbled up from his throat. The flesh-eaters shifted ranks, bringing their weapons to bear on the tall beast, when a howl cut through the night, a long, wailing cry. And there, out of the shadows, came the golden-eyed boy, racing for them, teeth bared, clanking his swords together, flanked on either side by devils and elves.
"Peter!"
Cricket cried. Nick's heart swelled at the sight of the wild boy, and he let loose a howl of his own. Peter screamed and launched himself into the nearest flesh-eater, slicing completely through the man's neck. The severed head flipped back and smacked the next man. Peter thrust his blade into that man, the next, then the next, eyes mad with bloodlust, weaving, ducking, kicking, slashing, dodging, cutting a path of death and dismemberment. The devils and elves charged in right behind him, their screams and cries filling the park like a battalion of insane cats. Nick heard girlish laughter, caught sight of the three girls as they skipped across the pond, only they were girls no longer, their hands twisted into claws and their mouths into fanged snouts. They fell upon the two flesh-eaters nearest where the lady had been. On the far side of the bank, the witch appeared, flanked by four Bargast, her single emerald eye glowing. She walked casually across the pond toward the fighting, as though on her way to a picnic. The flesh-eaters didn't know which way to turn, which flank to defend, and fell back in a confused tangle. The captain did his best to further their confusion, leaping forward, striking down the nearest flesh-eater from behind. Nick and Cricket followed his lead, and the three of them pressed into the flesh-eaters. The flesh-eaters lost their spirit, lost any coordinated defense, stumbling into each other as they retreated. Nick hacked and slashed, Maldurial biting and cutting through limbs. Nick saw their fear and realized with horror that he was smiling. Their screams and cries punctuated his howls, and at that moment,
He wanted nothing more than to kill every one of them, to cut them open and crush their beating hearts in his bare hands. His eyes gleamed as he stepped over the dead and dying to get at the next soul. The static of a bullhorn, then a deep, booming voice cut through the night.
Drop your weapons and put your hands in the air! Drop your weapons now!
Sergeant Wilson shouted again and fired his revolver twice in the air. The crowd stopped then, breaking apart, clumping largely into two main groups. All eyes, all those strange eyes, fell on him and the half-dozen officers around him. In the sudden pause, the wails, screams, and groans of the wounded, the maimed, and the dying filled the air.
What the good goddamn is going on? The sergeant said as he surveyed the blood and gore,
the severed limbs, the dozens of bodies writhing about on the ground.
Men? No, he realized. Look at their skin. Their horns. Monsters?
The sergeant decided that was the best description. Monsters decked out in armor and rags, carrying swords, axes, and spears. They were backing away from the small people.
Wait, are those? No, they can't be. Yes, kids. Those are kids. Wild kids wielding swords and spears of their own. And
he lost his train of thought.
What the hell is that?
He pointed at some sort of huge goat-headed beast. It had actual horns curving out the side of its skull and was carrying a tree limb as though it weighed no more than a baseball bat. Blood and what looked like part of someone's scalp hung from the end of the limb. A white flash caught the sergeant's attention, and there, on the far bank, three little girls knelt over a prone body, their hands and mouths drenched in black gore.
Holy fucking shit!
And, just as the sergeant was ready to call it a night, he saw a green woman standing, yes, standing on the water and looking at him like she would eat his liver.
Mother Mary Jesus, all the fucking back, he cried.
This didn't make any sense. None of it. Not a bit.
We're in some deep shit here, the sergeant thought, and shared a quick, fretful look with the other officers,
then glanced back toward the ferry terminal.
Where was backup? Where the fuck were the ESU team, the special response guys, the dudes with the heavy calibers?
He hit his mic.
Need backup now, he called,
trying to keep the nerves out of his voice.
East side of Battery Park. Men down. Multiple armed suspects. Need backup right now. Right fucking now!
All at once, several of the monster men began to walk away, rather casually even, like they'd just decided they didn't want to play anymore.
Hold up!
The sergeant yelled, pointing his gun from one creature to the next.
Everyone just sit tight!
But no one was listening. The black-skinned men continued to withdraw, slipping away into the park in small groups and clusters.
What do we do, Sarge?
One of the officers asked while jabbing his gun at the monsters as though to ward them off. The Sarge didn't answer. He had no idea. This shit hadn't been in the manual. He only knew he couldn't let these guys get away.
Gonna have to shoot someone. Gonna have to start blasting these creeps away.
He squared his sights on a man wielding an axe, began to squeeze the trigger, when he noticed something weird, weirder even than all these monsters and little devils. The pond, it was glowing. He lowered his gun for a better look. His brow furrowed.
What the hell?
Some sort of radiant mist was forming on the top of the pond.
Chemical agents?
The sergeant's skin prickled. He'd slept through most of the lectures on bioterrorism, but had perked up once they'd started talking about the effects of chemical and biological attacks on the human organism.
and the one thing he had learned was that he had no desire to spit up dissolving lung tissue or drown in his own body fluids. The sergeant started backing away. Then something weirder happened. His definition of weird was expanding by the second, that made him forget all about chemical agents. There was something in this mist, lots of somethings. He heard sounds, strange, eerie echoes, like women weeping and children singing, caught sight of shadowy, eyeless children with pumpkin-sized heads and deformed mouths that peeled back, exposing rows of prickly teeth, and crawling up behind them, hunchbacked women with emaciated arms and legs, shriveled flesh and black holes for eyes, their distended abdomens swollen and pulsing, giant stingers dripping black, viscous goop protruding from the tips of their sagging breasts. They extended their arms to him, smiling sweetly, inviting him to dance. The sergeant turned to run and ran right into a member of the special response unit. Behind the specialist was a squad of at least 20 well-armed ESU team members, hard, well-trained men who knew their business.
"What's going on?"
the specialist started, but the sergeant didn't have time to answer questions. The sergeant had to go, had a doctor's appointment, needed to feed his goldfish, left his toaster oven on, something. The sergeant hauled ass out of there, leaving behind one very bewildered ESU squad. A moment later, right about the time the swarm of disembodied heads flew screeching past, and the naked old women with the scabby raven heads started to dance merrily around the squad, to weave their cold fingers along their necks and scalps, the special response unit turned tail and followed the sergeant rapidly from the vicinity. Chapter 26. Horned One. The mist blanketed the park in a luminescent silvery glow, muting the shouting men, blaring horns, even the sirens. Peter felt as though he were in a dream, the whimpering and groaning of the wounded and dying echoing along with the sad song of the mist.
The mist?
The mist could only mean one thing.
The lady's alive,
Peter thought.
There in the pond. She must be in the pond.
The pond's glow faded, slowly returning to black. Peter jerked his swords free from the dead flesh heater at his feet, not even bothering to wipe the blood off, just shoving the blades back in their scabbards as he sprinted for the pond. He pushed past two wounded flesh eaters, supporting each other as they hobbled away, giving them not so much as a glance, focused only on the pond, on the lady.
"Where is she?"
Peter whispered, scanning the pool. He needed to find her, needed to see for himself that she was indeed alive. He saw Danny, standing knee-deep in the pond, the rope still tied around his middle. The rope was taut and sank below the water. Peter leaped into the pond, splashed out to Danny and grabbed the rope, following hand over hand until he found the lady. He gently pulled her to the surface, cradling her. Peter saw her face, her half-open eyes, blank and lifeless, completely void of any color, then saw the angry gash in her collar.
"Oh no,"
he whispered.
"No, no."
He pulled her to shore and laid her on the bank. She slowly opened her eyes and smiled at Peter.
"Mabon, you found me."
She touched his cheek. The witch was there, beside them.
"No, Modron, you silly teat. It's just the boy. Your Mabon is dust and bones."
She took the lady's hand in hers.
"Now, no more gibbering. Concentrate on your wound."
The lady's eyes closed. She seemed to stop breathing altogether.
"Do something,"
Peter said to the witch.
Please, do something.
Oh, stop your blubbering, the witch said. There's little I can do. Avalok gave his healing touch to Modron, not me, she sneered. Little bright and sparkly here was always his favorite. Look, she stopped the bleeding at least. She'll be all right then, Peter insisted. Maybe. She's weak.
She used herself up, bringing on the mist.
She needs water. Pure, fresh water, not this stinking, stagnant pool. We have to get her out of here. Take her someplace where...
Peter!
Huck called.
Behind you!
Peter whipped around, sword in hand in a mere blink. There, next to Danny, the captain. He stood knee-deep in the pond, the rope in one hand, a long knife in the other. Peter's lips peeled back.
You!
He snarled and pointed his sword at the man.
Hold!
The captain called, raising his hands, holding the knife up.
I just want the boy, he gestured to Danny. Just want the boy, nothing more.
Peter couldn't believe his ears. This demon, this monster, dared ask to take a child from him. After all the devils that lay dead at this man's hands?
Never,
Peter growled, and leaped into the pond, charging the captain with a wide swing. The captain parried the blow with his knife and fell away, causing Peter to barrel past. The captain snatched out his own sword, readied himself.
Peter, no!
Nick cried, and jumped into the pond, splashing between them.
Stop!
Nick carried a spear, one of the large flesh-eater spears. He brought the shaft up, blocking Peter. Peter leveled his sword.